This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June 29, 2012. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Can the straight-up weather market sustain itself into harvest? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Persaki, Director of the Statistical Division at the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Our panelists today are Ellen Dearden of Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. This past week, the corn futures went straight up on weather concerns. What are the possibilities that September corn takes over July's lofty levels going into harvest? Ellen Dearden.
I don't expect to see the futures do that on to overtake the July, but I do think that we'll see basis improve against the SEP. An awful lot of places shifted their bids from July to SEP right away this week.
Well, is it possible, Ellen, that September does, on the futures basis, does reflect more of the July value?
Yeah, I think it's got to reflect some kind of an old crop value in here. Absolutely.
And will traders then look at September, December as a spread play?
I think September, December will be a spread play. And right now, the bear spreads have been dictated for the week, except for going into Friday's close.
What is the upside longer-term potential for soybeans if the weather pattern remains hot and dry? And how steep is the downside if we start seeing more normal rains here on out into soybean harvest? Kurt Kimmel.
Well, as long as it stays dry and you continue to start to build a speculative interest, especially if you stay dry for another month, and you know, trade kind of believes beans has a little bit more time than the corn. You can take the lead contract. I don't know whether it's July. July's just got a little bit more time in here. Crack $15. I imagine you can start talking $16. The November beans, you can start to talk possibly, you know, $16. We remain dry and don't get double crop acres in, and possibly on up to the $17. But we're getting a crowd in there who's wanting to get long, and first sign of rain or good rain coverage, they're told to get out. So it could be a straight-up, straight-down affair.
Over what period of time?
Well, I think you're going to have the highs here fairly quickly during the summertime window. I think you can only maintain bullish momentum, you know, during the hot weather here during July. So I have a feeling here, you know, it could be early as next week up to maybe the end of July.
What are the weekend and month-end technicals telling us moving forward, Mike Zuzolo?
Probably from a standpoint of the lead month futures, Dave, and the ones that are going into delivery, the July contracts, we can clear, if we can clear 673.5 in July corn, that's the March 9th high. We tested that Friday but closed back below it. If we can clear that on a closing basis, next place is 706 area where there's a tiny little gap up there on my charts anyway. For July beans, like Kurt said, that $15 high, that 1509 high this week that was taken out on a close, that was the April high. That opens up the July beans up to about 1604 against the July futures. And that goes back to the July or what was it? Yeah, the July 14th 08 high is what we're talking about then. And then you start to talk about, okay, if we're talking about 08 highs with USDA carrying a 3.3 billion total demand, back in 2008, 2007, we couldn't get much over 3 billion bushel demand. So we're now in that stage of needing to ration the demand and take prices probably well over the average, ultimate average farm price because we're going to have to clip that demand off some more if it stays dry.
And at what price does that rationing take place?
I think it's happening now. The July crush margin was 19 cents on Friday afternoon's close. I think the export market, until weekly export sales for the beans and meal, I think it was very, very quiet, and the trade was starting to get a little nervous about that. And then we had some sales to China after the weekly export sales. That kind of brought the demand back. That may be one of the reasons why we had the unwinding of the corn bean spreads on Friday, other than just the trade felt more comfortable to go back to spreading, both bull spreading, like Ellen was talking about, and then the Nov bean Dees corn spread.
Kurt and Ellen, does that bull spread continue next week?
Boy, I don't know. There's a lot of folks that think that should be the case. Certainly the cash markets come back a little bit towards the tail end of trade for the week. I don't know on the bean side.
You're speaking July contract. We're going through liquidation there. It's going to be impossible to trade that or predict that according to what's left there. We've got to remember, if we move higher here, the bearish break can kick in on the short term from the fact that these guys are going to be taking downtime in here. They're not going to chase the market. But ultimately, as we go into September and on, they've got to come forward and get some coverage on, because they can't take downtime for 365 days.
Here's how futures settled this week. July wheat, a high of 782, a low of 682. The settlement, 739, up 65 and three quarters from last week. July 2013 wheat, the settlement, 797 and three quarters, up 68 from a week ago. July corn had a high price of 676 and a quarter, a low of 602 and three quarters. The settlement at 672 and a half, up 81 and a half from last week. December corn, the settlement 634 and three quarters, up 80 and three quarters from a week ago. July soybeans had a high of 1517 and three quarters, a low of 1455 and three quarters. The settlement for July beans at 1512 and three quarters, up 70 and a quarter from last week. November soybeans finish out the week at 1427 and three quarters, up 52 and a quarter from a week ago. And July oats had a high on the week of 336, up 7 and a quarter from last week. Okay, a question for everyone. By and large, traders shrugged off the acreage and quarterly grain stocks report this week in favor of radar maps and 10-day forecasts. But are there any nuggets in these reports that we should keep in our back pocket for later, Ellen?
I think the thing that hit me was that already we're seeing USDA lower the harvested acres on corn. So we're acknowledging that planted acres went up, but harvested acres as a percentage of planted acres are very low. And I think to have accepted that number, for USDA to have done that so early in the crop year, I think is pretty amazing.
And so if you take 166 and start subtracting from it and you get down to 155, 157, which is where some traders are already beginning to calculate, you come up with a corn crop of below 14 billion bushels on current demand. That's a pretty low new crop corn ending stock number.
And it is a low ending stock number, but don't forget, if we have the yield down at 153 or 155, whatever number you want to plug in, we're going to be shaving demand too. So we'll see, instead of that ethanol number at 5 billion, we'll see that down lower. Same with livestock feeding. We'll be feeding more wheat.
Kurt, a nugget?
Well, it just sets the stage for the monthly supply-demand report in February. Basically, you plug in today's numbers and project on out. As Ellen indicated, the demand side of that equation is going to have to be shaved, indicated by higher prices, slowing down usage. But the bottom line is affected by yield. So yield to come is the major feature. I thought today was kind of phenomenal, though. We had the report, but yet the market reacted before you saw the report. And I believe the black boxes got a hold of the information. They saw the big acreage number, and the market just went collapse. But yet, when you look at harvested acres, if you look at the stocks and the radar, they got their lunch handed to them today.
So are you suggesting that this method of trading, of showing numbers during the reports, maybe not the best in the long run and not best interests of producers?
Well, this is what we talked about when we started the trading through the market report. We could see it down 20, 30 one second and up 20, 30 the next minute. It's great if you want to, you know, put orders outside the ranges and take advantage of the breaks and the rallies in through here. And just an indication that we're just going to see extreme volatility, especially this year as we go through the growing season.
Mike, a nugget from the reports.
Yeah, I'm going to take the side with Ellen only on the beans. I think when you see such a big acreage increase in the beans and they increase the harvested acres, that naturally brings in the double crop issue. And when you've got over 70% of the major bean belt in some form of a drought at this point, I think you can start lowering yield at this point, Dave, to be protective of not getting caught too short. And what I mean by that is I've been trading at about a 43.5 bushel yield on a smaller acreage base. I'll accept USDA's acreage base for the most part at this point, but I'm also lowering my yield back down to 41.3, 41.5 level because I think you're adding more bad acres. So statistically, that naturally will bring down your yield. And I think on my way over here from Lafayette to Champaign, my expectations were mostly met. The corn was in real trouble. You could tell it. The beans, very short, but still look like they could really come on. Now, I didn't get out of the car and look at anything, so maybe there's no flowers on those beans, you know. But from the road, it looked like to me that my expectations, the client surveys that I've been getting back, there's still time for beans. So I went ahead and lowered down to 41.5 on the bean yield with the idea that some yield has been lost just because of USDA's number. That yield could probably go below 40 bushels if we don't get good rains in the next 15 days. So I think that's what I picked out of the report on the bean side.
Okay, let's bottom line this with all of you then. What do you think will be the price action on corn futures and soybean futures between now and the July WASDE and crop production reports, Kirk?
Well, just tell me what the weather's going to do, and I'll tell you the market direction, basically. I think it's, weather-driven, but, you know, until we get a good soaker, I think downside risk is minimal.
Minimal downside risk. What about upside potential then, Mike?
I would say that I'm going to still play it like an 88 market, Dave, where the corn's been hurt. Beans haven't been hurt yet from an agronomy standpoint if we get rains in the next 15 or so days. So we made the high in Dease corn on July 5th of 88. We made the high in November beans on June 23rd. I would suspect that by the time we get to the August report, if we haven't got any rains, we've got most of the upside factored in at that point. As far as upside, if the Dow Jones Commodity Index is any good leading indicator, I think you've got that $7 level on your corn futures price. Then you start watching basis. Do we go from 20 under to 20 over, 30 over for the fall delivery? I think that's real possible. But at bottom line is, as you go over $7 into that 7.25 level, one way, shape, or form, in the cash market, it's going to get tough for the demand base.
Ellen?
Boy, I think we could very well put a high in before this July 10th report. I this market has all the makings of a big blow-off kind of a top to me.
Let's look at marketing then. If a producer has not made new crop corn or soybean sales, and they are in one of the drought areas, and this is for a lot of the listeners who are listening to us on this radio station, what should they do at this point, Mike?
If you've got a good insurance level, I think you want to look at your gross revenue per acre and start assuming what you're going to lose within 2 weeks. If it doesn't rain, assume what you can still make within 2 weeks if it does rain. My bet is that you're going to be looking at the corn yield a lot rougher than the bean yield. So I would probably start with the re-ownership side on corn if we don't get the rains, Dave, and then later down the road start with the re-ownership, you know, within 15 days or so with the re-ownership on the beans. If we would happen to go sharply higher before that 15-day time period in the beans, and I'd never get I never get let in on the market, then I'd turn back into a put buyer and be on a hedge side by the time we get to the July-August reports.
Kurt?
Well, if a producer hasn't made any cash sales by now, he's not going to make any cash sales by now. It's sort of the nature of the beast. But as Mike kind of hit it, there's a lot of moving targets here, a lot of, you know, your insurance and so forth. But I'd say probably a strategy is 100% correct and is 100% protective. And if you don't want to make the cash sales, get some put option protection on the downside. That way you're not committing to actual physical bushels until you've got that downside protection if everybody wants to run for cover.
What if a producer is expecting a normal or better yielding crop and they made some sales at significantly lower levels, Ellen?
then I think you've got to come back and look to be buying calls or selling puts under the market.
We also had a hogs and pigs report, I believe, on Friday. And the numbers look out of the gate pretty normal. Is that how you read it, Mike?
Yeah, and you know, we had 101 kept for breeding right on the numbers, but that's 1% more than last year. And I think along with the cattle on feed report and the fact that the ethanol market, the crude oil market, and the RBOB market was coming back on Friday, I think the corn demand is going to be a lot harder to shake than maybe the bean demand here as we go forward, Dave, based upon that hogs and pigs.
I'll be back in 2 minutes with our guest, Joe Persaki of NASS.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. Hot, dry weather continued across much of Illinois this week. Some rain did fall across northwestern Illinois. The rain totals in those areas were generally less than an inch. Meanwhile, the rest of the state received no significant rain. We started out the week with mild temperatures, but they quickly soared into the upper 90s and low 100s by Thursday. Several locations set new records for that date, including Chicago and St. Louis. The hottest reading in the state was 109 in Kaskaskia in southwestern Illinois. The U.S. Drought Monitor expanded drought conditions in Illinois this week. Right now, 89% of the state is in some stage of drought, while the remaining 11% is considered abnormally dry. Hardest hit was southern Illinois, which is considered an extreme drought. Hot, dry weather is expected to continue across Illinois this week. Temperatures are forecasted to be in the mid to upper 90s in the northern half of the state and above 100 in the southern half on both Saturday and Sunday. Those will be in the mid to low 70s. It's more of the same with very high conditions through the 4th of July. There is a chance of rain this weekend and into Monday in northern Illinois, north of Interstate 80, but the chances are only in the 20 to 30% range. No rain is forecasted for the rest of the state. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our panelists today are Kurt Kimmel, Mike Zuzolo, and Ellen Dearden. Joining us today by telephone is Joe Persaki, Director of the Statistical Division at the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Thanks for being with us today, Joe.
Well, thanks, Dave.
I want to start with this. Given the hot and dry July, do you think that NASS might resurvey particular states in regards to soybeans for the August crop production report?
Dave, I would say the likelihood of that is pretty low. You know, given right now what we picked up during the our June surveys.
And explain that a little bit further, please.
Well, the thing is, it's all about resources, and normally when we do a re-interview survey, it's generally because the crop is not in the ground. And in this case, virtually everything was in the ground. But the thing is, as you all have alluded to, with the soybeans on the double crop behind the wheat, is that these were some intentions. There's folks saying, I plan to do it, but will they do it? And we're looking at a level of about 7% or so, which is kind of right in line with, normal double crop, values.
Questions for Joe Persaki, Mike.
Joe, on the yield model, coming up on the July report, how much weight does the crop conditions play in the July yield assessment as maybe opposed to the satellite data? Because we're not getting any real hard data back from producers or the FSA at that point?
Right now, a couple things to clarify. Yeah, the World Board guys down they're working off a 20-year trend yield model, and they have some adjustments in there for planting progress. Now, there's always a possibility that they may come off of that depending on the way they see things. You know, with the crop condition ratings that comes out on the Mondays, but it all depends. You know, they're feeling the same pressure everyone else is. You know, where's that 166?
Now, does that, they left out last year's model as far as, they left out last year's corn yield as far as the model goes, but if I remember right, Joe Glauber was talking about how some of the crop conditions for June and July are probably built in there for last year, and that's kind of what I'm getting at. Is that where they kind of merge this together? Or do you have any idea where they're headed with that?
Yeah, I'm not real clear. I can't really answer you on that one, but, I do know that they have the crop condition. They look at that and they pull it in. And you're right. They felt they, being the World Board, felt that last year being so low, lower on corn, it wasn't indicative of normal behavior.
Ellen,
Joe, it seems to me that the biggest yield drop we've seen from the May numbers into June numbers has been a little shy of 5 bushels per acre, something like 4.7 in 1998. Certainly, out here in drought country, we're talking about yield expectations well below that 166, maybe down 10 bushels per acre. Are you ready to make those kinds of changes?
Well, on the NAS side, we won't really make any sort of decision until, we get to August, because we'll see what we get back on this farmer survey. I have been out there. I was in southern Illinois last week. I saw exactly what you guys are talking about. It's pretty bleak down there.
Kurt?
Joe, a lot of my guys are producers, and their comments on these reports. But from a producer's point of view, could you maybe give us a little insight? There's a lot of numbers, a lot of moving targets. From your perspective, what set of numbers should the producer keep his eye on here over the next couple reports?
Well, it's all about yield right now. I mean, you guys hit the nail on the head, because the acres are, they're pretty much solid in whatever you work off of, but it's all about yield. And the thing is, the farmers can sure help us. When they get those reports, when you guys are out talking to your farmers, when they get those reports in the mail coming up here at the end of July, for our August report, the best thing they could do is tell their story, because they're the ones that know really what's going on with their place.
Mike?
Joe, on the corn stalks report, it came in just a shade under the average guess, but it was low enough that it probably attracted some attention, and I would suspect that's why the July corn had such a good day on Friday. Can we get any kind of an idea, given some of these ethanol temporary hot idle shutdowns and some of this weaker cash basis, can we get any idea of whether that 851 carryover is going to be a real carryover in 11, or how much more it may drop or where it may shake out at this point?
Well, the things, when the World Board are going through, they're sitting at that 851, and there's a lot of assumptions in that number, one of it being the new, the new crop corn for 12, displacing 11. You guys have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions. World Board has a lot of questions. We got a lot of figuring out to do. One thing I can tell you right now, based on that, that stocks number we came out with, that 315, the 3.15 billion bushels, 53% of it was off-farm, and that compares to a 10-year average of 48. So the off-farm, the commercials are trying to get as much corn as they can get.
Ellen.
Joe, it just seems to me that we're going to have to be feeding something. If ethanol production's dropping, we're not going to have the distillers to feed livestock, and I'm particularly talking on the cattle and hog side. That's going to have to come to corn or feed wheat. Has there been any discussion among your group about that?
Only thing I could tell you is that based on the comments you're making about with the feed and residual, on the the corn balance sheet, I know they're doing a lot of work looking at a lot of different things, and I do know, I believe it's Tuesday, there's going to be a document, a paper put out by a couple guys in the World Board and ERS talking about how one could kind of calculate or explain feed and residual on the corn balance sheet. I don't, that's probably not the answer that you're looking for, but mean, that's the closest thing I can give you, that, you know, there's a lot of questions going on right now.
Kurt?
Joe, do you like the 7:30 release, or you want to go to an afternoon release?
Hey, that's a good question. That was on my list of things. You know, we got the public comment period on the, you know, for the release time. That's open until July 9th. We appreciate any comments you have. You know, from our perspective at USDA, it, as long as the market's going to be open, we're pretty much open to any time. Dave Dickey and I, we've talked about this, and, you know, what's the best for? You know, what's the best for the producers? What's the best for everyone? And I lean toward what's the best for the producers. What time is best for them?
But don't you enjoy hanging out all night with the guys, though?
Well, it's kind of interesting, but, you know, maybe it's better, you know, for somebody else. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there may be a better time. I don't know. If the markets are going to be open, hey, we're willing to look at a lot of different things.
Mike?
On the bean stocks, Joe, you went to 667 on that. That was above the Dow Jones range of estimates. Was that exports or what? Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, a lot of the questions that came up on corn, you know, the last few years about, you know, measuring and measurement errors and that sort of thing, I can tell you 73% of the beans were off-farm compared to 61% over, you know, in the past. So most of it's off-farm, and I tell people when it's off-farm, I know it's run across the scale, and I'm pretty confident in that number. So, I mean, it's there.
Joe, thanks for being with us today.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Thanks to everybody, and thanks to all the farmers and ranchers out there that take the time to fill out their forms. Appreciate it.
That's Joe Persaki, Director of the Statistical Division at the National Agricultural Statistics Service. And now a chance for a quick final word from our panelists, and we'll begin with Kurt.
Yeah, it's a dynamic market. These happen a couple times during a lifetime, and we feel this market's good here for a little while. The important thing is having some type of plan. Just don't go in there blindly.
So have a plan and being ready to execute that plan.
Correct.
Ellen Dearden.
I would reiterate that, too, and I would just say that an awful lot of guys are just experiencing paralysis, and that's never a good thing.
And Mike.
I would echo that, and I would also say, Dave, that I think we've gotten to this time period where we're working on 3 days as far as a long-term analysis. I would ask people to step back and go to three-month analysis again as far as how you plan your farm and how you plan your numbers, and especially for somebody like me. The technicals are going to be a big deal next week, I think. Weekly lows last week are key, and the weekly highs last week are key, especially since we finished a quarter.
We would like to thank our panel, Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois, Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can access Commodity Week programs and listen to daily agricultural programming on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. There you can also subscribe to our weekly WILL Ag e-newsletter. It's at willag.org. Go to the pane in the right navigation window there and click on the subscribe link. This is Dave Dickey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.